Welcome to the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 and www.freakradio.org. Want to invite you to have, and this is Thursday, March 30th, 2017. I'd like to invite you to have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down names, addresses, telephone numbers, web pages, any information that you need to take action. Let's start with local news. Steelhead trout have been tagged in Alameda Creek. Alameda Creek Alliance volunteers on Wednesday helped fish biologists from the East Bay Regional Park District capture adult steelhead trout in lower Alameda Creek, below an impassable concrete barrier that blocks fish spawning migration, and move the fish upstream into Niles Canyon. Five steelhead trout were netted during a half-hour fish rescue by about 30 volunteers and fisheries staff. Radio transmitters were attached to four steelhead so their upstream migration can be tracked by park district biologists. There will be another attempt next week to capture several dozen more steelhead. They are thought to remain in lower Alameda Creek below the Bart Weir, the site of a future fish ladder. And be sure to visit alamedacreek.org for further information. And the killing is over, and the spring migration is on, in the weekly report from the Buffalo Field Campaign. It has been an intensely difficult winter for the buffalo and those of us who love them. At least 1,300 wild buffalo souls were lost, taken by rifle and trap to appease the intolerance of the vocal minority that make up Montana's cattle industry. The lives of all these buffalo are wasted because those who continue to wage war in the West insist that the land is theirs to do with as they please, and other lives be damned. Thankfully for now, the killing is over, the trap is closed, and the hunters are gone. Spring is here and the snow is melting. Migratory birds such as pelicans, sandhill cranes, and mountain bluebirds have returned early. Grizzly bears are waking up and the grass is turning green. The timing for the buffalo and other grazers could not be better. They suffered a long, hard winter. Just the snow conditions alone were enough to kill many buffalo, and their haggard bodies are hungry for nutritious grasses. Adult females, bellies huge with calves, are bringing their families to where they will find replenishment and rest. Buffalo have all but vanished from the Gardner Basin. Just a few small groups remain, poised to join other survivors who are heading south into their calving grounds along Blacktail Plateau. Some buffalo will continue further and come from other places, heading west into the Hebgen Basin and onto Horse Butte and the surrounding lands there. Near West Yellowstone, a buffalo nation is coming, and thanks to last year's enormous victory gaining year-round habitat in a portion of this basin, our volunteers and local residents are able to celebrate the sacred arrival of the without the bitter edge that always came with the fear of hazing. This time, the buffalo can roam to Horse Butte and lands north without being threatened by horsemen, law enforcement officers, or helicopters. They can stand on the land they need to, have their babies in peace, and grow strong without being brutally chased by livestock agents for miles on tiny legs. The buffalo families coming to Horse Butte and other lands north of the Madison River now get to choose where they will roam and for how long. Despite these great victories, threats remain. Those who venture south of the Madison River will be subjected to the same mistreatment, as these lands were not included in the governor's year-round habitat decision, and they could be subjected to hazing or worse. The Buffalo Field Campaign are, of course, continuing our work to erase all of these arbitrary lines in the land and gain more ground for the buffalo so they may roam whatever side of the river they please. As this celebratory migration takes place, it is keeping the Buffalo Field Campaign busy along the roads. Buffalo must cross the very busy Highway 191 to reach their calving grounds, so we are with them day and night, helping to warn traffic of their presence. Our night patrols are one of the most important activities we undertake. Buffalo are nearly impossible to see at night, so our night patrols are out there for as long as the buffalo are on or near the roads. Armed with our reflective emergency signs, flashing slow paddles, and strobing pink wands, we are able to prevent some of the accidents that occur in the dark of night. But we can't prevent them all because some people simply choose not to heed our warnings. The nighttime speed limit has been reduced to 55 miles an hour, but without enforcement it is meaningless and there has not been a single state trooper around, even though the state said they were committed to enforcing these more wildlife-friendly speed limits. The permanent signs that the Montana Department of Transportation has put up are good and likely to help, but are easily ignored. That's another reason our presence is so important. Our signs are unique and they are not always there, so people know when they see them that there is actually buffalo on or near the road. We know we won't be able to prevent every accident, but we are committed to doing our best, and we will press for safe passive infrastructure so that the buffalo and all Yellowstone region wildlife can get where they're going without the threat of being struck by vehicles. You can help, especially if you're a Montana resident or a frequent visitor to Yellowstone, by contacting the Montana Department of Transportation and urging them to make a stronger commitment to keeping tourists and wild buffalo safe. Give them a call at 406-444-6201. That's the Montana Department of Transportation, 406-444-6201. Until safe passage is in place, the Buffalo Field Campaign will be out along the roads doing our best to save lives. If you want more information, please visit the Buffalo Field Campaign's website. That is buffalofieldcampaign.org. And Sea Shepherd Australia writes that Sea Shepherd assists Liberian Coast Guard in the arrest of a cargo vessel on suspicion of identity fraud and illegal fishing. On March 21st, after receiving intelligence that a refrigerated cargo vessel was suspected of transmitting a fraudulent identity code outside the port of Monrovia, Liberia, the Liberian Coast Guard, assisted by Sea Shepherd crew and Israeli maritime advisors and conservationists, boarded the 93-meter Sierra Leone flag motor vessel MV Leon Run. The Automatic Identification System, or AIS, is a navigational aid which a vessel uses to transmit its identifying information, such as name and radio call sign, was transmitting an IMO number that does not exist in any records. IMO numbers are unique identifiers that remain linked to a vessel throughout its lifetime to improve the safety of life at sea and reduce maritime fraud. The motor vessel Leon Run has been detained 5 times previously over the past 5 years and has a history of illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing activity. During the inspection, it was determined the vessel was carrying 460 tons of fish cargo on board and intended to offload it in the port of Monrovia. The captain of the motor vessel Leon Run was unable to present a cargo manifest for the fish on board, a legally required document without which it's impossible to determine the origin of the fish. The captain later claimed the fish had been transshipped from 4 fishing vessels belonging to the Leon Run fleet. However, no documentation, including copies of the fishing licenses of the catching vessels, could be presented to corroborate that statement. Refrigerated cargo vessels are a major contributor to IUU fishing as they are used to launder the catch of IUU fishing vessels. On these so-called reefers, legal catch can be mixed with illegal catch and the catch origins can be impossible to deduce. Laundering fish is easier than laundering money, thus vessels transshipping fish at sea must be able to prove the origin of the fish by carrying on board copies of the fishing licenses of the catch vessels, said campaign leader Captain Peter Hammerstead. The Liberian Coast Guard ordered the vessel arrested upon suspicion of identity fraud and IUU fishing while the origin of the fish cargo is investigated. To address illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing, we must go after the vessels actively engaged in the illegal fishing activity, as well as the vessels that support that criminal activity. In Liberia, I have instructed the Coast Guard to target every link in the criminal chain, including these motherships, that makes fishery crime possible, said the Honorable Minister Brownie Sumakai, Minister of National Defense. Since February of 2017, under the name Operation Sola Stella, Sea Shepherd has been assisting the government of Liberia to tackle IUU fishing by providing the use of the motor yacht Bob Barker as a civilian offshore patrol vessel operating in Liberian waters under the direction of the Liberian Ministry of National Defense. The patrols have thus far resulted in the arrest of 4 IUU fishing vessels. Developing countries are particularly vulnerable to IUU fishing, which accounts for up to 40% of all fish caught in Western African waters. In 2016, Sea Shepherd partnered with the government of Gabon for Operation Albacore, resulting in over 40 fishing vessel inspections at sea and the subsequent arrest of three IUU Congolese fishing trawlers and one Spanish longliner. Operation Sol Estela is a continuation of Sea Shepherd's global commitment to work actively with national governments and their law enforcement agencies in the fight against IUU fishing. And in further Sea Shepherd news, not one cent for bribery. The story of the arrest of the fishing vessel Lu Rong Yuan Yu 988 in this story by Peter Hammerstead. For the crew of the motor yacht Bob Barker and the 10-strong Liberian Coast Guard boarding team, it was just a matter of waiting and letting the illegal fishing boats come to them. The day before the motor yacht Bob Barker arrived in Liberia, local fishermen from the border town of Harper, situated just 13 miles from where the Kavala River divides Liberia from Côte d'Ivoire, had been airing grievances on national radio about foreign trawlers running over their artisanal fishing nets. The fishermen appealed to the Liberian Coast Guard for assistance. Although the Kavala River forms a natural boundary between two West African countries, its nutrient-rich waters spawn fish for whom borders are meaningless. For the fishing vessels chasing fish west as the fishing season in Ghana, which lies to the east, has closed, borders are equally unimportant. The town of Harper is named after the United States Senator, who proposed that the country be named Liberia. When French authorities seized several American merchant ships in 1797, the newly independent United States and the French Republic were at the brink of war. Agents of the French foreign minister asked for bribes prior to negotiations to avert armed conflict, the famous XYZ affair, to which Robert Goodloe Harper, the town's namesake, famously wrote, "Millions for defense, but not one cent for tribute, choosing preparations for war over paying bribes." Not long after the motor yacht Bob Barker arrived in the Ivorian border, the fishing vessel Lu Rong Yuan Yu 988 used the cover of darkness to cross into Liberian waters just after sunset, its trawling gear fully deployed inside the 6 nautical mile inshore exclusion zone reserved for Liberia's artisanal fishermen. The Sea Shepherd's small boat launched from the motor yacht Bob Barker sped off to intercept and quickly boarded the poacher, where a recalcitrant fishing captain tried to bite the Liberian Coast Guard lieutenant when he was told to stop the vessel that was now attempting to flee into Ivorian waters. The captain was subdued and the engines brought to zero. "Is this vessel currently in the territorial waters of Ivory Coast?" the lieutenant asked the fishing crew while pointing to the vessel's GPS. "No," they admitted meekly. "Good," said the lieutenant. Remark that the admission of guilt before placing the vessel under arrest. The Sea Shepherd crew and the Liberian Coast Guard sailors then watched as the fishermen on board the fishing vessel Lu Rong Yuan Yu 988 complied with the Coast Guard order to open their nets and release the fish and shrimp back into the sea. With the fishing gear on board, the vessel under the command of Liberian Coast Guard proceeded to Monrovia, a full day sailing away. Just after midnight, the captain of the fishing vessel disassembled an air conditioning unit in his cabin and removed the 36,000 Ghanaian sedi, about $8,500, that he'd stashed hidden in there. This money was then offered to the lieutenant as a bribe to let the vessel go. After calling in 2 witnesses from the Liberian Coast Guard, the lieutenant explained to the captain that bribery is a criminal offense in Liberia and that this offense would be added to the long list of violations the captain had already committed. The captain was defeated. Thanks to the leadership of Honorable Minister Brownie Sumakai, Liberian's Minister of National Defense, Liberia has become the most recent battleground in the global fight to combat illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. At the border with Ivory Coast, the Liberian Coast Guard, working in collaboration with Sea Shepherd crew, are the frontline troops fighting to protect both fish and the rights of local communities, and not taking a single cent in tribute. And we read from the Environmental Protection Information Center that there is great news for the Humboldt Martin. In response to a lawsuit brought by the Environmental Protection Information Center and the Center for Biological Diversity, a federal judge has overturned an April 2014 decision by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service denying endangered species protection for the Humboldt Martin. Therefore, the Fish and Wildlife Services will have to revisit their decision on the fate of our furry friends. Although good news for the Humboldt Martin may be ahead, the Trump administration still believes in the modernization and overhaul of the Endangered Species Act. The ESA is one of the sharpest tools in the epic legal advocacy toolbox. Without it, the fate of our forests, watersheds, and wildlife are in danger of being swept back into time. The battle is not over, so support EPIC and other environmental groups and help protect the Humboldt Martin. Martins are small carnivores related to mink and otters. Coastal martins are found only in the old-growth forests and dense coastal shrub of Northern California and in the central and southern coasts of Oregon. Coastal martins were believed to be extinct until 1996 because of a historic fur trapping and the loss of their old-growth forest habitats, but are now known to occur in three small isolated populations in California and Oregon. Since then, researchers have continued to detect martins using track plates and hair snares. In 2009, the martin was detected in Prairie Creek Redwood State Park by remote sensing cameras, the first to be photographed in recent times. Today, there are less than 100 Humboldt martins left in California. This number is so low that a single event, such as disease, poisoning, or fire, could eradicate all the coastal martins from California. This number is also so low that the species could simply drift toward extinction. We have already seen an alarming dip in population. Between 2001 and 2012, the remaining population of Humboldt martins declined by 42%, and that was largely before the record-setting drought. Humboldt martin is dependent on healthy forests. The hardwood shrubs, ferns, and forbs all make for prime habitat for the rats and voles and other small creatures that make up the diet of these iconic forest predators. Protecting forests and protecting wildlife go hand in hand, particularly in an age of dwindling forest resources and climate change. At the Environmental Protection Information Center, we work hard to advocate for protection not only for the trees, but for the whole forest itself, because maintaining a healthy forest necessitates the conservation and preservation of its constituent parts. We effectively navigate the often complicated legal processes by working from the micro to the macro. EPIC provides necessary representation for the voiceless wildlife in the very halls of the legislatures and governments, and even into courtrooms. As an advocate, EPIC will continue to forego the process to increase the habitat awareness in reference to Humboldt Martin and continue to advocate the protection of the redwood forest, they habitat. And if you want more information, please go to www.wildcalifornia.org. And we read from the Earth First Newswire that nearly extinct tigers have been found breeding in a Thai jungle in this story by Oliver Holmes of The Guardian. The critically endangered Indo-Chinese tiger has been found to be breeding in a Thai jungle, providing hope for a subspecies whose total population may only number a couple hundred. Conservation authorities in Thailand, along with two international wildlife organizations, released photographs of new tiger cubs in the country's east. The images support a scientific survey that confirmed the existence of the world's second breeding population. The other breeding population is in the Hoai Kai Kang Wildlife Sanctuary in western Thailand. The Department of National Parks of Thailand, the anti-trafficking group Freeland and Panthera, a wildlife conservation organization, said only 221 Indonesian tigers were estimated to remain in just two Asian countries, Thailand and neighboring Myanmar. The group said it had, formerly Burma. The group said it had been tracking the tiger population since 1999, and for the first time last year, camera traps had photographed six cubs from four mothers. Poaching for the illegal wildlife trade stands as the gravest threat to the survival of the tiger, whose numbers in the wild have dwindled from 100,000 a century ago to 3,900 today, the agency said in a statement. It noted the tiger's remarkable resilience to wildlife, given wildlife poaching and illegal rosewood logging in the eastern jungle. Indonesian tigers are smaller than the better-known Siberian or Bengal tiger subspecies, which is the most numerous, with a total population estimated at 3,500. Tigers, which once ranged across much of the region, are all but extinct in southern China, Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam, and much of Myanmar. Although there is no evidence of their medicinal effect, tiger bones are used in traditional Asian remedies such as health tonics. Alan Rabinowitz, The chief executive officer of Panthera said in a video call from New York that Thailand had one of the best protected and best tiger areas left in the world. Thailand has shown that you can protect tigers and bring them back. They can do this now in the Eastern Forest Complex as they have done in the Western Forest Complex, he added. Panthera said on its website that only 8% of tiger sites had a confirmed breeding population, meaning the photos were a huge and rare win. It said a breeding population here means the future of the subspecies is less precarious and could potentially even expand. Tigers here could disperse and repopulate Cambodia and Laos, where no breeding populations currently exist. And El Salvador has approved a new law prohibiting metals mining in this story from Reuters, as found on the Earth First Newswire. El Salvador's Congress on Wednesday approved a law prohibiting all metal mining projects in a bid to protect poor Central American countries' environment and natural resources. The new law, which enjoyed cross-party support from 70 lawmakers, blocks all exploration, extraction, and processing of metals, whether in open pits or underground. The legislation also prohibits the use of toxic chemicals like cyanide and mercury and makes permanent an executive order passed by former President Antonio Saca in 2009 and renewed by subsequent administrations. Several regions of the country have attracted interest from international gold and silver mining companies. In October, El Salvador won an arbitration at the World Bank's International Center for Settlement of Investment Disputes against the Australian-Canadian miner Oceana Gold Corporation, which was seeking $250 million over a 2009 denial of an extraction permit. In its decision, the World Bank body ordered the company to pay El Salvador $8 million in legal costs. And in Oregon, Tobias Reed, the Oregon treasurer, now sees a path forward to keeping the Elliott State Forest public. Oregon Treasurer Tobias Reed said Tuesday he now supports a plan to keep the Elliott State Forest in public hands. Reed's declaration comes more than a month after he said the best and most realistic plan for the 82,500-acre forest was to proceed with the planned $220 million sale to Lone Rock Timber Management and the Cow Creek Band of Umpqua Tribe of Indians. The reversal could change the forest's fate. Oregon had got drawn into the international limelight for just considering the sale, as it was competing for an outdoor sporting goods conference that dropped its home in Utah because of the public land stances of officials there. Reed's statement also tilts the balance on the state land board, which includes Secretary of State Dennis Richardson and Governor Kate Brown, who we mentioned last week was supporting this solution. Reed and Richardson, a Republican, said last month the state should sell the land because of its financial responsibility to generate money. Brown had pushed in recent months to retain public ownership. In an interview Tuesday, Reed said he now sees momentum in the legislature for keeping the land in public hands. The first-term treasurer said he was always open to that option and now sees increased action and interest in Salem, the state's capital. It's an ongoing effort, the Democrats said, of the still-evolving plan kickstarted by Brown that would keep old growth and other environmentally valuable portions of the forest in public lands and shelve the $221 million sale. I'm confident that the path is there. I feel like I've said all along that my job is to look out for the state's fiduciary responsibilities. Oregon leaders said they are constitutionally required to make money off the land, which is tied to the Common School Fund. That account generates revenue for K-12 education across the state, but timber revenue has been falling since 2012 following legal pressure from environmental groups over logging in sensitive habitats. Environmental groups have disputed whether the state does have to generate significant amounts of revenue from the forest. Brown issued a statement Tuesday saying she was heartened that Reed shared her commitment to keeping the Elliott public while making the Common School Fund whole. Particularly given the current national political landscape, retaining the Elliott State Forest in public ownership is critical to ensure sustainable harvests of timber to fulfill our fiduciary obligations, she said. Richardson also issued a statement adding that all three land board members want to make sure the Common School Fund lands benefit Oregon children. Treasurer Reed is a thoughtful person, and I look forward to learning more about his thinking on this issue at the next land board meeting. The three elected officials can't confer with one another outside the land board meetings due to state public meeting law. Reed said he's also been buoyed by State President Peter Courtney's support for issuing state bonds to free at least some of the forest from its common school fund requirements. Courtney issued a statement saying he supports keeping the land public and will remain open to considering bonding as a part of the solution. The news did not go over well as the loan suitors for the property. Today, Toby Luther, Lone Rock CEO, issued a statement blasting Tuesday development without mentioning the treasurer by name. The Douglas County Timber Executive said the company's proposal alongside the Cow Creek Tribe met every criteria laid down before us over a 2.5-year period. Luther said that ultimately Brown wanted a different version than the one she backed in August of 2012. And an immediate ban has been sought on the M44 cyanide bombs in Idaho. The Center for Biological Diversity and their allies this week petitioned the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Services to immediately ban the use of M44 devices in Idaho. The devices, which release a deadly dose of cyanide, typically intended for coyotes or other wildlife, poisoned a family dog near Pocatello, Idaho earlier this month and hospitalized the 14-year-old dog's owner. Our petition also asks for the immediate removal of all existing devices from Idaho. M44s lead to the agonizing deaths of thousands of animals every year, many of them non-target animals. Cyanide bombs are indiscriminate killers that must be banned, said the center's Andrea Santosier. Any animal that might pull on the baited trigger is at risk, including endangered wildlife, Canada lynx and grizzlies, and even people and pets. Enough is enough. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. You can hear a rebroadcast tomorrow afternoon during our Environment Friday at 3 p.m. In North Adams, Massachusetts, tune in to WNMB 107.1 Fridays at 5:30 in the morning. KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Idaho, broadcasts the Earth First Update at Wednesdays at 3 p.m. In Dade City of Florida, tune in to WLSL 92.7 Sundays at noon. You can go to KGIG 104.9 in Modesto, California, or Berkeley Liberation Radio at 104.1, and they sometimes play the Earth First Update, but it's not listed on their schedule. Or you could go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number 4all.net, where you can listen anytime online or download this or previous versions of the Earth First Update. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and air. I'm your host, Uncle Dennis. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and please tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.